I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen, all you motherfuckers.
Politics, politics, humor, humor, tequila, tequila, and an IQ of under 64. Yeah. You're listening to Art Cop Radio, 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 Radio.
Hi, my name is Bart. You're listening to Bart Cop Radio. This is show number 48, and it's a big one. We had that week off, go to Chicago. Got a little backlog. I ended up with a five-hour show. Don't want to put 5 hours on four CDs, so we're going to cut it in half. This is going to be the first half. Start out with a shout out to Knuckle, just to be sure. Oh, he loves the Chinaco. Lately, when I think of Chinaco, I think of corn, and I think we've just been robbed this year. It never got hot in Oklahoma. Today, it's 74 degrees in Oklahoma. July 28th, or whatever it is, 74 degrees in Oklahoma. 74 degrees in Oklahoma. The corn is still small. We never did. We just missed the whole corn season because it never got hot in Oklahoma. Do you hear me, God? It didn't get hot in Oklahoma, God. Were you busy? All right. Can't argue too much about that. So let's move forward. Got a big, big show. Got a bunch of stuff in here. Some of it was convention. So we're going to put the convention stuff in show 49 and hope it works, because we got to think of something to make show 50 good. Maybe I'll find somebody funny and just rob them for show 50. So here's show 48. Hope you like it.
This is www.bartcop.com.
USA Today. It's in today's USA Today. Fox's ratings rise despite recent harsh criticisms. Recent attacks on Fox News Channel by liberals, most notably by the documentary Outfoxed, which I've ordered but it has not arrived yet. Damn. Please, Mr. Postman, bring me my Outfoxed. God, I hate to wait for shit. God, I hate. Seemed like Fahrenheit 9/11. It took years to get here. Everything takes for fucking ever. Why can't it just show up? It ought to be illegal to tell you about something, and then, you know, you can't have. We went and saw the Bourne Supremacy yesterday, and again, they're giving us all the December previews. Hey, are there no movies coming out between now and December? You know, it's like at 2:30 in the morning, they run a Pizza Hut commercial, and they show the pizza. Oh, it's piping hot, and the cheese is bubbling, and you see the big chunks of Canadian bacon. As they go, oh, please send me one of those. But no, they're closed. I hate when they offer you stuff that you can't have. But anyway, back to the story. The attacks have actually helped ratings, according to the network. Well, they lie, so who knows? Fox total viewers up, or Fox, ready? Fox total viewer numbers are up 13%. Since July 8th, over the same period last year. Well, yeah, I think the world is in a lot worse place than we were last year. We're hated globally. And every day seems like there's another kidnapping and another beheading and another five soldiers killed. So, yeah, I think people are watching the news more. Fair and accuracy, yeah. Robert Greenwald's out Fox, which uses Fox News clips as evidence that the network leans right and supports the Republican agenda. Duh, do they really? Last week, several groups challenged Fox's use of the slogan Fair and Balanced with the FCC. Well, now that's stupid. Don't go challenge the FCC. Mock them. CNN and everybody else ought to be saying Fair and Balanced. Oh, please. Why does Fox lie to you that way? If you let their lie stand unchallenged, people are going to believe it. So why the hell don't the other networks mention something about that? Fox claimed the Fair and Balanced title, and if no one else claims it, then they have it. Geez, why don't someone use their head? Fight back a little bit. Somebody show some balls. But this Greenwald fellow who produced the Outfox isn't buying it. He says the ratings uptick could be tied to interest in the election. Regardless, I don't trust anything Fox News says. Well, good for you, Greenwald. In the long run, this little film is striking some good blows. It and publicity about Fox's right to hurt in the pocketbook. No advertiser wants to choose sides. Oh, sure, they do. Democrats buy cars and soap, too. The Democrats are the majority, let me remind everybody. That's where Fox News is vulnerable. Well, you know, we may be the majority, but we don't want to win, so they have the advantage on us there. But the reason I brought that up about Fox's ratings is because right next to it, there's a little bitty column, Clinton takes the heat. Most reviews of my life, former President Bill Clinton's memoirs, have been critical. Time out. Nobody read the son of a bitch. That really pissed me off. It came out like on a Tuesday. No, well, it came out on Tuesday, but so it hit Monday at midnight and Tuesday morning. They were all blabbering about how fucking dull it was. Well, yeah, I'm sure you read 900 pages between midnight and the time Katie Couric went on the air. 900 pages. They are lying. They decided it was a dull book before they opened the damn cover. That's a fact. And this little column here explains some of this. Most reviews of my life have been critical, mirroring the negative tone of coverage throughout his presidency, a study finds. The Center for Media and Public Affairs, I don't know them, these people, they get these names, analyzing reviews in large newspapers and comparing those results with how the network's covered his two terms in office, found that 85% of reviews about Clinton were negative. Consistent with network coverage that ran from 56 to 72% negative from 93 to 98. Clinton remains a popular president, but the political leader that journalists love to hate, says Center Director Robert Lichter. Just as in the sex scandal, journalists bashed him, but the public didn't care. But check it out, 85% of the stuff they wrote about Clinton was negative. The best president we've ever had, who fixed the stock market, who fixed the economy, who got rid of the debt, who gave us peace and prosperity, they just hated his guts. And along comes this illegal usurper who gave away the entire $11 trillion to his rich buddies and started a war for no goddamn reason other than he got to steal some more money. And they love him to death. He can do no wrong. The network's constantly correct the mistakes of the monkey, and it just makes me a little sick. Can we not get someone to just report the facts? Why don't you say, the president went here today, some people thought he was warmly received, others said he wasn't, there was a few boos, there was a few claps, there was a bunch of this, so just tell us the facts. Don't explain things to us. There ought to be like an hour of news, and then follow with an hour of bullshit if you want, but put the news in. That's where Fox does some of their worst work. They say, oh, we're fair and balanced, and then they'll come right on and say, I've heard this myself. My favorite one was, they asked Paula Von Zahn, this is all these years ago when she was on Fox, they asked her, well, if Bill Clinton, this is right in the middle of a news program, they say, well, if Bill Clinton is committing all these crimes, why doesn't Janet Reno arrest him? And Paula Von Zahn says, because she's in on the crimes too. That's the fair and balanced Fox, giving you just the facts. Just the facts from Fox. The sons of bitches.
I can be found sitting home all alone. If you can't come around, at least please telephone. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. Baby, if I made a man, something I might have
I heard some of Al Franken's show Thursday. And he had a fella call in. Let me give you a little background. This fella was a precinct captain or county whatever for the Republican Party in some county nobody ever heard of in Kentucky, Tennessee, who cares? It's a toothless Bush state. And this fella has in his window, in the window of the GOP headquarters in that county, a bumper sticker that says, Kerry is Bin Laden's candidate, Bush is mine. So obviously that's pretty inflammatory. Someone, I'm guessing, filling in the blanks here, somebody saw that. They called Franken. Franken made some phone calls, managed to reach the Republican headquarters in that county and asked the fella if he'd call in for some polite debate. And the guy said, okay. So the fella calls in. I heard it from start to finish. Al is extremely polite. And he talks very, very slow and deliberately. So it was very calm, tenseless situation. And he started out saying, I understand you have a bumper sticker in your window that says, Kerry is Bin Laden's candidate, Bush is mine. And the guy said, yes, sir, I do. And he said, well, I wonder if you could take, he says it real slow, as you know, but he says, I wonder if you could take a few minutes and explain to me how Kerry is bin Laden's candidate. And the guy said, well, it's widely known that John Kerry is an enemy of America's defense because he has voted against every bill that would help the defense or help the military. And Al rightly reached in and said, excuse me, every bill? And he said, well, virtually every bill. So they kind of argued for a while. Basically, the guy was saying that Kerry was really weak on defense, and Franken tried to counter with, well, you know, John McCain and Chuck Hagel both say that Kerry is strong on defense, and as you know, those two men and Kerry marched into war for their country, where, if I'm not mistaken, Bush did not. And the guy comes back with an attack on McCain. Oh, everybody knows about McCain. But he said, all right, well, let's get back to the this how virtually every time Kerry has voted against this country. Can you give me an example? And the guy said, well, yeah, back in 95, Kerry voted to slash, what was the, he voted to gut the Pentagon and their intelligence capabilities. And Franken somehow knew what he was talking about, or maybe he threw a poker bluff on him. But Franken said, well, no, excuse me, but that was a 1995 satellite communications bill that the military, I'm sorry, that the Pentagon had not really asked for, had not included in their funding. Somehow they acted like the Pentagon didn't really want it. And he said, and besides, Kerry voted to cut back 1%, which is hardly gutting the military or the intelligence of the Pentagon. And he said, as a matter of fact, the Republicans ended up, as you know, they had control of both houses, the Republicans ended up passing a bill that cut more than 1% than Kerry. And the guy said, oh, yeah, facts and figures. I know how you guys are. He started giving them some of that. But, you know, I thought it was very typical. As a matter of fact, when the conversation opened, Franken tried to lay the trap, and the guy wouldn't fall for it. He said, would you say you're a typical conservative? There are many people who think, oh, I would never think, you know, the guy, he wouldn't dare allow himself to be painted as a typical conservative because he probably had the feeling that Franken was going to put the big fuck on him. And now Franken did, because as I keep telling people, we are on the side of the facts. We have the truth on our side. The only way you can lose a debate is if you allow yourself to get sidetracked into some minutia, or if you just don't know enough about the situation to counter with a fact. But if you're old, like I am, and you've just been around a while, and if you only remember 10 or 20% of the things, the important things that happened, you can come back with a whole lot of stuff. So basically, this guy, and what's funny is, he believes it in his heart and his soul. No amount of facts, no amount of proof would ever change this guy's mind. He would cut off both his hands and both his feet for Bush, even though, you know, Bush would sit there and laugh at him while he's doing it. The idea that, and there's a lot of facts that I don't have at my fingertips, but a whole lot of the downsizing of the military happened while Cheney was Secretary of Defense under the smarter Bush. And when they talk about, oh, Clinton's against the military, well, he didn't cut it as much as Cheney and Bush did. Oh, Cheney and Bush knew what they were cutting. You know, I mean, they always have a reason why the facts don't matter. And if you just don't let them, if you refuse to let them get away with that, you're going to win every debate. Now, I'm not here saying I win. Well, yeah, I guess I am. But if I'm effective in a debate, it's because I just don't allow the other guy to go somewhere goofy. If you stay on point. When I was a little kid, I watched these debaters on TV. I remember watching Madeline Mary O'Hare when I was either in grade school or high school. And every time the guy would go off on, oh, so I guess you're one of those people that believes, no, sir, let's stick to the Constitution, let's stick to the Bible. Did you know Madeline Mary O'Hare knew more about the Bible than anybody I've ever met? Boy, it was always funny when some diddle monkey would try to trip her up with the Bible. She'd say, oh, the guy would say, oh, the Bible, no, sir, in Deuteronomy 2:12, it says it's here. And the guy would go, oh, okay, I'm sorry. But yeah, Madeline, before they murdered her, was a very, very good debater. A little on the crusty side. She had a little Bart in her, had a little Randy Rhodes in her, but that's a good thing. All those ACLU people, I don't know if she was, but Barry Lynn and those people, pretty much anybody from the ACLU, they're trained to stay on point. And when some monkey goes flying off, well, what about that time in 1991 in Panama? It's like, no, dude, we're not in Panama. It's not 1991. We're on the subject of church and state or whatever the topic is at the moment. But whenever the Republicans get cornered, they change the subject. And that's why it's fun to debate in the chat room, because when a guy goes off on some tangent, all you got to do is highlight the question, say, excuse me, there's something on the floor that you refuse to recognize. Why are you running from this simple question? You're always going to win a debate if you do it that way. But it was fun to hear Al Franken shut this guy down. The guy was, oh, and don't think for a second that Al Franken changed his mind. Nothing in this world. Trust me, you show me some documents that Clinton did it. Like I'm always saying about Scott Peterson. The day they prove Scott Peterson did it, let's all hang him. The day they prove Kobe Bryant did it, let's all hang him. Anybody who's been accused of a crime, if you can prove it, bingo, guilty, let's get the rope. But until then, you're supposed to keep half an eye open. You're supposed to keep one eye on the possibility that the facts might mean something.
Ken loved Brewster, he's loved Danvers. Everyone else loves Ned Flanders.
Not me.
Everyone who counts loves Ned Flanders.
Got a whole pile of stuff here. I guess I should just dive into it. And this isn't so much a showbiz story as it is a Republican greed story. As predicted, CSI back to full staff as actors return. CBS reversed itself and is welcoming back CSI co-stars George Eads and Georgia Fox 1 week after firing them for missing work in a pay raise dispute. Both actors agreed. Check this out. Both actors agreed to come back for their previous salaries of $90,000 an episode compared with the $120,000 offer they rejected earlier this month. What a bunch of vengeful sons of bitches they are at CBS. They were making 90, they're on the biggest show in a long, long time. I mean, ER was big, too. Remember they offered that Margulies, whatever her name was, $27 million to hang around for a couple of years? That's the kind of money that these big shows make. They can offer one lady $27 million. I don't know how many years it was for. Seems like it was three. But hell, it could have been one, no telling. Because they're making so many hundreds of millions of dollars on these. We've been over this before. Remember when they reran, when Seinfeld went off the air? They sold, oh my God, they sold, like in New York, they sold a single rerun of Seinfeld for like, I think, $500,000. $500,000 for a rerun. That's $500,000 on Monday. $500,000 on Tuesday. That's $2.5 million per week for reruns just in New York. Now we talk about Boston. They don't have as many people. So a Seinfeld episode there was like $350,000. And maybe in Philly it was $300,000. And in Boston, I mean, Baltimore was maybe $250,000. And Atlanta $250,000. And Chicago back up to three, you know, they're making so many hundreds of millions of dollars. Just unbelievable. They can't, it's like BFEE money. They can't even count it. There's so much money. And then they go screw these two over that, over this little bitty amount of money, this $30,000. They offered him $120,000 and they said, no, we'd like more because we know you guys are just raking in gold mine after gold mine. You're just dying. You're drowning in gold. And all we want's a little tiny piece, you know, because they're watching us. They don't watch CSI because it's, the producers are the top producers. No, they're watching it because the characters and the people, yeah, the writers and the producers, they have something to do with it. But it's the people that you sort of fall in love with or whatever the term, that you become endeared to. I'd say both of these are integral. They could do a show without them, yeah, maybe. But I think that's a real shitty Republican way to handle this. No, that's not how it works, but that's how it works at CBS, those sons of bitches. So, anyway, as predicted, those two came back, but they made them apologize, and they cut their pay. How petty is that? They offered him $120,000, and they said no to the $120,000, so now they're saying, all right, you're coming back for $90,000. I mean, that's just the same as lick my boots, and I'll let you get all the employees assembled, and then you're going to get on your knees, and you're going to lick my boots just to show everybody else that I'm the man, and you ain't shit. That's how they are at CBS. That's a Republican for you. I hate that. Oh, here we go. Letter to the editor. This is in the Tulsa paper. I don't generally read the Tulsa paper, but I was starved to feed my mind or something, so I read the Tulsa paper while we were watching some movie. A conservative press. Now, this is the Tulsa paper. Since the opening of Fahrenheit 9/11, both print and broadcast journalists have eagerly delved into the life of Michael Moore. Everything about Michael Moore, from his physical appearance to his unorthodox style of filmmaking, has been analyzed and critiqued. What has been missing from the majority of the reports is a careful examination of the information presented in the film. Yes. There was a thing on the Monday page. Guy talked about two cheeseburgers more. That's it exactly. If you can't attack the man's ideas, call him fat. That's how you win a debate in the Republican Party. You call the guy fat because what he said was true, and you can't answer what he said, so you call him fat instead. There you go. That's how they work. While not one journalist has bothered to refute the accuracy of the information, a few have taken exception to a couple of points and labeled them as distortions of fact. I find it disingenuous that journalists are suddenly offended by so-called distortions of fact Isn't this what Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly, Ann Coulter, Cal Thomas practice every day? Oh, please. They don't distort the facts. They make shit up. Rush with his Hillary murdered Vince Foster. Yeah, that's a distortion? No, he made that shit up out of fucking thin air because he's a lying bastard. From what I've seen in the media, most journalists do not have a problem with distortions of fact per se, but simply have a problem with a point of view that doesn't promote the conservative agenda. That is true. To this day, I haven't seen one column that takes apart what Michael Moore did in the movie. Why doesn't somebody... I've seen a couple... Oh, there's one thing about... Michael Moore gave you the impression that the Saudis left early, but it turns out they were interviewed. It's like, well, Michael said A, and it turns out they change the subject. They don't refute A. They give you A, and they refute it with B. Well, no, you're supposed to refute A with A. If Michael Moore said they left early, well, then you should pounce on when they left. Don't refute that by saying they were all interviewed. And the idea that the FBI interviewed 30 of them out of the 120 and for a few minutes, you know, 3,000 murders, and we're going to, Jesus Christ, if they found a, you know, floater in the river. You watched Homicide and Law and Order and those shows. You know, they go to way, all kinds of crazy lengths to track down who this might be and how they might have died and all that. But 3,000 dead and the most spectacular live murders ever recorded. And they talked to the family for 30 minutes before they let them leave the country. And so they pick on Michael Moore. Oh, he might have misstated something. He might have got a detail wrong. Well, Jesus Christ, what about the major point? Sons of bitches. All right, here we go. Another... Again, Tulsa paper. Go figure. No Safer, it's called. Lately, President Bush has been pressing his claim that starting a war with Iraq has made us safer. Yet his administration keeps giving us high-level terrorist attack alerts. And U.S. activity in Iraq has boosted anti... Fuck. Ready? Here's another one. No Safer. See, this is why the radio takes so goddamn long. I gotta repeat everything 30 times. It's one reason I got to get better before I go live. No Safer. Lately, President Bush has been pressing his claim that starting a war with Iraq has made us safer. Yet his administration keeps giving us high-level terrorist attack alerts. And U.S. activity in Iraq has boosted anti-U.S. terrorist recruitment in the Middle East. Now, the administration is discussing the possibility of postponing the presidential election in the event of a terrorist attack. As far as the result... The results are concerned, according to a Bush administration report that came out in June, world terrorism casualties increased in 2003 by 56% over last year, and that doesn't include the battle injuries and deaths of our troops in Iraq. I saw a sign recently that said, we are creating enemies faster than we can kill them. Quite honestly, I don't feel safer. Other people have mentioned this. Let's kick it around one time. In a regular speech, Bush is saying safer like 10 or 15, 20 times. In a short speech, he'll say, America's safer. We made America safer. America's safer. It's always safer. It's safer with me because we made it safer. And Iraq made it safer, made it safer, made it safer. And then in the next breath, he says, but we may have to postpone the election because there's going to be another terror attack. We got to raise that level because here he comes. He comes now. He's coming. Everybody get ready. Get your duct tape. Get your fresh water. Hide in your house. Oh, but go to Disney World. But hide in your house. But be afraid. But don't be afraid. A constant, constant again and again. Michael Moore brought this up in his movie, too. Why doesn't someone call him on this besides John Stewart or Michael Moore and this dude in Tulsa paper? Who calls them on this? Where the hell is Maureen Dowd? Where are all these big journalists? Where's Dan Rather and Mr. Liberal? Where's all these people? Why doesn't somebody call them on them? Why don't they say, the president has got a monstrously confusing agenda here. He's telling us we're safer and prepared for the big attack is coming at the same time. How the hell can we be safer if we got a big attack coming? Why doesn't, I know John Kerry could mention this, but no, I guess he wants to be polite. Oh, I'm recording this Monday, the day the convention starts. And I tell you what, I love to be wrong. I just love. The only bright spot I can see, or that pops into my head, last time we went through this in 2000, we expected Gore to lose. Remember all the polls said it was, like Bush 53, Gore 47. And then a couple of days before the election, I remember very clearly, Rush was saying something like, I got a story, I'm hearing some things, but I'm going to wait and tell you later, but I'll tell you I'm hearing some things. And what it turned out is he heard in the last few days, like 3-4 days before the election, that it was really, really tight, a lot tighter than they thought. a lot tighter than anybody was predicting. So if we can go into this about tied, then we might can sneak out a 3 or 4 point victory. I don't know, but I tell you, I'm not feeling confident. It would be real nice if I could report to you on the next radio show. Oh, after seeing the convention, I feel so much better, but I don't see it. Kerry's not fighting back. He doesn't have a wartime consigliere. He's got a very handsome trial lawyer running with him, but he chose to bypass the terror thing. Again, they're showing Bush 53, Kerry 35 when it comes to taking care of the country and making it safe. The idiot who cost us 3,000 lives and invaded the wrong country, half the country trusts him more. Where the hell is, why don't people use their heads? The guy that keeps screwing up constantly and lost the $11 trillion and 3,000 lives and another 1,000 Marines on top of that, he's the guy we trust to handle everything. What the hell's wrong with people? I should give you this one in print, but I want to read just a little bit, just because it reads so good. Paul Krugman is a good writer, you know. He wrote a thing, The Arabian Candidate. If the movie were remade with just a twist. The other night, what was it, Sunday night, I guess, me and Mrs. Bart. No, Saturday night. Doesn't matter. Me and Mrs. Bart watched the original Manchurian Candidate. And you probably heard of this movie, but you probably haven't seen it, maybe. What happened, it was made in 62, and it was they just had the dumbest luck. It came out either 2 days before or after the Cuban Missile Crisis. And it's real hard to get worked up about a movie. Ooh, what if someone tries to take over when you just went through a global missile crisis? I mean, we didn't know this at the time. We didn't know this until like 1990-something. But Cuba had nuclear missiles ready to launch. Had Kennedy not called off that invasion, oh my God, this whole world would be so much different. They could have hit Miami. I don't know if they could have hit anybody but Miami. Maybe Atlanta, who knows, but Cuba had nuclear missiles, and we started a war with them. Oh, my God, that almost turned into... And so, since we lived through that, yeah, some dumb movie. Who gives a flying? And then a year later, of course, Kennedy is murdered by the Republicans. And so they took the film off the market till 88. So that's 25 years, an entire generation that didn't get to see the film. So we watched it the other night, and I think I had seen it before or something, but I didn't remember any of it. So, yeah, it was a new movie to me. And something I don't know, maybe someone could point this out. Lincoln was everywhere. This, not sure who directed it, but just the picture of Lincoln was constant everywhere. I mean, maybe it had been so long since an assassination, they wanted to just somehow bring Lincoln into the picture as a reminder of how awful a presidential assassination can be. I don't know, but every time they would cut to a different scene, there's a picture of Lincoln, and then the camera would show Lincoln for about 3 seconds, and then they'd move over and show the actors what was going on. Then they cut to another scene, there's another picture of Lincoln, and then they'd do this again and again, Lincoln everywhere. Matter of fact, the senator in the film, they had a Halloween costume party, and of course he dressed up as Lincoln. It's just Lincoln everywhere, everywhere, everywhere. But that's a confusing point for him. Anyway, Manchurian Candidate, big, big movie. Denzel, Meryl Streep, going to be out here, I think, in about a week. But Paul Krugman's talking about the original Manchurian Candidate. Check out the Arabian Candidate. In the original version of Manchurian Candidate, Senator John Iceland, who Chinese agents are plotting to put in the White House, is a right-wing demagogue modeled on Senator Joseph McCarthy. As Roger Ebert wrote, the plan is to use anti-communist hysteria as a cover for communist takeover. The movie doesn't say what Iceland would have done if the plot had succeeded. Presumably, however, he wouldn't have openly turned traitor. Instead, he would have used his position to undermine national security while posing as America's staunchest defender against communist evil. Starting to ring some bells. So let's imagine an update. This time, the enemies would be Islamic fanaticists who install as their puppet a president... who install as their puppet president a demagogue who poses as a nation's defender against terrorist evildoers. The Arabian Candidate wouldn't openly help terrorists. Instead, he would serve their cause while pretending to be their enemy. After an attack, he would strike back at the terrorist base, a necessary action to preserve his image of toughness, but botched the follow-up, allowing the terrorist leaders to escape. Once the public's attention shifted, he would systematically squander the military victory, committing too few soldiers, reneging on promises of economic aid, Soon warlords would once again rule most of the country. The heroin trade would be booming. The terrorist allies would make a comeback. Meanwhile, he would lead America into a war against a country that posed no imminent threat. He would insinuate, without saying anything literally false, that it was somehow responsible, that it was somehow, meaning Iraq, responsible for the terrorist attack. This unnecessary war would alienate our allies and tie down a large part of our military. At the same time, the Arabian candidate would neglect the pursuit of those who attacked us and do nothing about regimes that really shelter anti-American terrorists and really are building nuclear weapons. Again, he would take care to squander a military victory. The Arabian candidate and his co-conspirators would block all planning for the war's aftermath. They would arrange for our army to allow looters to destroy much of the country's infrastructure. Then they would disband the defeated regime's army, turning hundreds of thousands of trained soldiers into disgruntled potential insurgents. After this, it would be easy to sabotage the occupied country's reconstruction simply by failing to spend aid funds or rein in cronyism and corruption. Power outages, overflowing sewage, unemployment would swell the ranks of our enemies. Who knows? The Arabian candidate might even be able to deprive America of the moral high ground. No mean trick when our enemies are mass murderers, by creating a climate in which U.S. guards torture, humiliate, and starve prisoners, most of them innocent or guilty of only petty crimes. At home, the Arabian candidate would leave the nation vulnerable, doing almost nothing to secure ports, chemical plants, and other potential targets. He would stonewall investigations into why the initial terrorist attack succeeded, and by repeatedly issuing vague terror warnings, obviously timed to drown out unfavorable political news, his officials would ensure public indifference if and when a real threat is announced. Last but not least, by blatantly exploiting the terrorist threat for personal political gain, he would undermine the nation's unity in the face of its enemies, sowing suspicion about the government's motives. Okay, end of conceit. President Bush isn't exactly an al-Qaeda mole, with Dick Cheney his controller. Bush's war on terror has, however, played with eerie perfection into Osama bin Laden's hands. While Bush's supporters, impressed by his tough talk, see him as America's champion against the evildoers. Recently, Republican officials in Kentucky applauded bumper stickers distributed at GOP offices that read, "Kerry is bin Laden's candidate, Bush is mine." Administration officials haven't gone that far, but when Tom Ridge offered a specific free warning about a terrorist attack timed to, quote, disrupt our democratic process, many people thought he was implying that al-Qaeda wants George Bush to lose. In reality, all infidels probably look alike to the terrorists, but if they do have a preference, nothing in Bush's record would make them unhappy at the prospect of four more years. If you're bin Laden, wouldn't you rather have an idiot monkey running this country who let Osama go? Remember, he had him cornered at Bora Bora. And he just let him fucking go so he could go after Saddam. It's clear as a bell. Why isn't he being impeached for that? You know, there were stories at the time. It's in the back pages. But remember, they right in the middle of the Afghan war, they called some kind of 30-hour truce. And a bunch of planes came in and a bunch of planes left. And they said, okay, go find bin Laden. Well, he just left on the plane. Why were our forces told to stand down so these planes could come in? Of course, that's not in the 9/11 report. Nobody asked about that. Me and Jon Stewart are probably going to be the only two people that's going to bring that up. That just kills me that the comedians in this country are the only ones that are doing the fight. Now, I don't mean that so literally, but you know what I mean. You can't get news from CBS or ABC or CNN. You got to get news from BarkCop.com and BuzzFlash and The Daily Show. People like that, that's crazy. That's upside down. We're supposed to be doing the jokes. The news people are supposed to be doing the news. But no, they are whores taking money from people like Bush and the big corporations to sell us a big-ass bag of goods that we can't use. You should be mad about that.
Bart Cop Radio. Yeah, you know what I'm saying.